I like this new generation of music.
You are listening to CJLO 1690 AM, now with The Noise Hour.
Let me tell you, Bobby, there's nothing funny about these sounds.
Tired of listening to music your dad likes? Tune in to CJLO 1690 AM to find something that'll really shock you.
Lucas Matthew Marsh for the CJLO Community Calendar for the week of Monday, October 23rd to Sunday, October 29th, 2023. Calling out all food enthusiasts or those who are just craving a break from ramen noodles. Concordia's International Student Office is spicing things up with a cooking class at the St. Jot Center on Tuesday, October 24th from 1 to 3 p.m. This week's theme is tackling food waste, showing you how to transform imperfect ingredients into a delectable meal. Just $7 gets you in and covers the cost of ingredients and an on-site meal. For all the savory details, check out the ISO's website. Montreal has a strong musical lineup for this week, with concerts by musical legends Shania Twain and Aerosmith. But for the indie folk fans out there, don't miss the Paper Kites and the Roadhouse Band at the Beacon Sealed Theater in Little Burgundy this Friday, October 27th. The Cactus Blossoms will be setting the stage for this indie folk journey. Doors open at 8 p.m. and tickets are just $40 Canadian, available on Ticketmaster. Looking to go on a world trip without having to leave the island of Montreal? This week is your last chance to check out this year's Garden of Lights exhibit at Montreal's Botanical Gardens. The Japanese, Chinese, and the First Nation gardens will be strung up with lights, music, and interactive displays for a truly immersive experience. Admission ranges from $11 to $23 per person. Visit mtl.org for more information. And that's your community calendar for this week. I'm Lucas Matthew Marsh.
Song before, Jacob, but considering the crappy day we're having outside, I just thought it was like a slow, low-key tempo vibe just to accommodate the weather we're having, you know?
Listen, it's a good song, but careful, you'll put me straight to sleep, man. This is screaming nap time for me.
You know what, but on a day like this, I just want to go to bed, snuggle up with my pillow, and
oh, yes, sir. You know it. You know.
On that note, you're listening to The Starting Rotation on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Gabriel Gindy. Alongside me, Jacob Snyder. Sorry for the little sleep song we just played there. But other than that, before we get into the nitty-gritty that is the sports world, Jacob, how's your week so far? What you been up to?
Oh, it's been tough. Let me tell you.
Midterms getting you?
No, please. I'm in journalism. We don't have very much homework. The Lions. Devastating loss on the weekend. I know we're not starting with football, but that all is sets your week back. And then all that rain, man, that allergy season for me. So just battling through, but feeling a lot better today and really excited to get going. Really excited to be here again.
So I also experience allergies. So like, what are you allergic to?
Everything? No, the second it rains, for whatever reason, those plants, they just put out a scent that will just set me right off. My whole face feels like it's 10 times the size it is regularly. So just blowing the nose all the time. I have all my classmates staring at me.
So it's pollen?
Yeah, I think so. Not that I've ever been tested.
Pollen, dust, cat hair?
Oh my goodness, don't get me started on cats. Can't be within 10 feet.
Oh, yeah. Well, on that note, hopefully you can get like some Reactum, some Claritin, pop a few of those.
Oh, we're already there. We're already there.
No Benadryl, though. You don't want that drowsy.
No, sir. No, Advil only. No. Not sponsored.
No, not sponsored. But, you know, with one week since our last show, a lot has happened in the world of sports. So let's just get into it. Like the NHL have, I don't know if people are aware, but apparently, well, not apparently, actually, they banned over the summer the use of Pride jerseys, Pride tape. And now recently, as recent as maybe like within the past 24, 48 hours, they have backtracked, allowing players to use Pride tape on their sticks. So it's always like a bit, you know, you have to kind of walk cautiously along this line. And the NHL just did this super horrible job. It's kind of like an oxymoron. It was a really, really, really crappy job that how they dealt with that on their end. Just from a marketability standpoint, I don't know what you think, Jacob, about this, but
whenever leagues are faced with controversy, it's really important for them to take a stance and then stick with their stance.
Exactly.
We've seen this in the NFL before with the players taking knees. What they said during the one season, it was acceptable. It was going to happen. There was going to be no discipline about it. But then going forward, they made the appropriate policy changes and have since stuck to it. It shows weakness by these leagues to go back on it, like you said. How do you go from saying, okay, it's not allowed, we don't agree with it, but then reinstituting it right after? Just from fan outcry. That's putting aside the actual views on the thing. It just looks weak at the league.
Not only that, but considering that a few players last year just wholeheartedly decided to not wear any of the practice jerseys. Like, I know, remember Ivan Proporov, Eric Staal, and a few other players decided to just wholeheartedly just say, you know what, we don't want to take part in this. Kind of created bad press for the NHL. So I think the NHL decided altogether to just get rid of the whole initiative. But at the same time, not only are you excluding a big majority or a decent majority of your fan base, right? You're kind of closing, because hockey was always, you know, not really the most inclusive sport. Initially, it's very expensive to get into. It's tailored more usually for the wider audience, right? So in terms of inclusivity, they kind of like just put the blinders on and neglected a whole potential fan base they could have had here. To backtrack on this now just seems kind of cowardly. And I don't think it really makes it doesn't really put any significance to the importance of LGBTQ community, because they are a community, right? And they deserve to be shown. But at the same time, to flip-flop back and forth, it really isn't a great look for the NHL.
Well, you and I were talking about this. It goes back to marketability as well. Like you said, do you not want to grow your fan base? Like, you talk about bringing out this initiative. Okay, you're going to bring in those fans, but then to take it away, and then, to have it, and then take it away. What does that say to them? Like, do you care? Do you not care? They're in between.
I think for them, it's more the bottom line is the most important thing. And to exclude like a fan base to then bring them back, for them, they're just seeing green. That's what I think. I think they don't really care about the community as a whole. Personally, I just think that they're doing it more for the money aspect of it.
Does the average NHL fan care though? If the players have, you know, colorful sticks?
No, I just think it was the media backlash they got from some players not opting in wearing these practice jerseys. And they're only practice jerseys. And there's some tape, too. It's not even the end of the world. But Ivan Proporov, for example, he's an Orthodox Christian, Russian. He said, oh, I'm going to use the religious belief, you know, as a precursor as to why I can't wear this. And then a few other players followed suit, citing, like, religion as precedence. But at the same time, of course you're gonna get backlash in any league about that, but as you said, stick to your guns. If you're gonna fully ban it, but now to bring it backtracking, it just feels like you're not really caring about the community. You care more about the money behind it, and that's what kind of peeves me off a bit.
The other thing that gets me is that it's a minority of players speaking out against it. It was the same, and again, I always tie things back to football. That's where my expertise lies. But the NFL, even this year and the past couple of years, after they changed the policies with the kneeling down, players were actually still allowed to kneel. Just now they need to do it in the locker room before games. They're finding a way to, for those players that maybe it doesn't align with their beliefs, they're giving them an opportunity to still express themselves.
Here's what I can counter, though. You just said they have to kneel in the locker rooms before games. So they're trying to exclude them and not get that public publicity aspect of it.
Definitely.
Right?
No, that's very fair. Yes.
They don't want to defame the league. So at the same time, are they kind of doing the same thing the NHL is doing in a way? Kind of like shunning it to then revive it to then shun it? You know what I mean?
You know what, when you put it like that, actually, it's just a publicity. It's a publicity debacle you do not need as the NHL. Your season's starting. It's excited. People are excited. I know when I first got to Montreal, every single question. So first thing they asked me, beyond where I was from, you could hear from the accent, who's my hockey team? Who's my hockey team? Are you going to root for the Habs? Are you going to root for the Habs? And then what we're talking about now, we're not talking about the games. We're talking about a marketing issue. Like, it just distracts from the product, and that's not what you want as a league.
No, exactly. And to, like, continue on this trend or theme of marketability, the NHL this season has released a Frozen Frenzy, very similar to the NFL Red Zone. We know how successful NFL Red Zone is. People use it on a weekly basis whenever they have, like, little football parties here and there to support their teams. But will it be as successful as the NFL Red Zone?
The thing that makes the NFL Red Zone great is that scoring opportunities are so few in the NFL. It's a big deal when your team drives all the way down the field and goes to score. I feel with the NHL, the teams are constantly crossing the midline and going to attack the net. There's what, 30 to 35 shots a game? Are you really going to cut? How are you going to know when to even cut? You're just going to cut for a save shot?
Not even on the scoring side of it, and I guess they would. I don't know. Maybe they'd show recaps of whatever that just played. I don't know, whatever sequence that just happened. But from the way I see it, it's more or less like, okay, so your favorite football team plays once a week.
Right.
Every team plays once a week, right?
Yes.
So whether it's like Monday, Thursday, Sunday, right? Yes, that's the schedule. So those days are like holy grail sacred for these fan bases, right? So when you have NFL Red Zone, they're highlighting every single game that is going on because there's only one game per team per week. In the NHL, teams play upwards of 3-4 games per week. So that exclusivity aspect of it, of going to see different teams, it's kind of like you're kind of losing that essence of like, okay, wow, like we're getting a weekly view of this team. We leave you that team compared to the NHL where it's like multiple games a week. Kind of doesn't, for me, it's kind of like that side of it doesn't really transcend well.
So you're not going to be tuning into this is kind of what
especially,
I'm,
well,
the impression
assuming,
I'm getting.
Assuming I have to pay. How much is NFL Red Zone?
So they often throw it in, but you're buying one of the packages for about $100 a year for all the games and they'll throw it in.
It's like a cable package.
Exactly. Okay. But for just NFL games. But to your point, I have friends that will just throw on Red Zone. Like, I was watching games with buddies on the weekend, and the one guy was like, hey, can we just put it on Red Zone? Mm. None of our teams were playing. It was just the afternoon slate. None of our favorite teams. Big Dolphins fans. I'm a big Lions fan, as all you guys know by now. They wanted to just watch Red Zone, not actually focused on a specific game. If you're the NHL and you're rolling this out, that's where you want to get to.
I just find that NHL personalities aren't really... They're not the most... Like, because... Every league has their resources on a marketability aspect, on an advertisement aspect, right? But these players, I don't know. It just seems like if you compare, let's say, NBA superstars to NFL superstars, then NHL superstars, there's a big contrast between what is an NFL or an NBA superstar compared to what is an NHL superstar in marketability. Because you hear them post-game. There's a lot of oohs, ahs, the team did great, coach did this, very monotone, not really talking. You look at like a post-game interview with, I don't know, LeBron James or even any other superstar, right? Their sound clips sometimes are great. For replay, but NHL just doesn't really hit the spot.
The other thing about the NHL, to your point, I know myself following some sports super closely, others from afar. I can name you the superstar players. The NHL is the only one where I really can't. You could name me a team, couldn't even name you their best player. Whereas other sports, every single time, I'll at least be able to tell you who their main players are. And I feel like that falls on the NHL. That should be something they work on to where... Their players, the best players, are more household names.
I do admit their social media is a bit lacking on that front. Even some of the captions sometimes made me like cringe a bit. But
hopefully, oh, they're that bad, eh?
Yeah, they're pretty bad. Oof. Like especially like when you look at like the in-house sausage that's being made from like specific teams. Like you look at the Bills when they have a win or something. Those weekly compilations on Instagram, or those reels. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, do I know what you're talking? Of course,
those are kind of like meme-ish. You know, they're pretty funny. But an NHL team would never do that.
The Bills, but I was gonna say the Chargers. Have you seen those anime season drop schedule release videos? Oh, they're sensational. You want to talk about getting your fans excited?
Yeah. Is that crazy?
Oh my goodness, it's incredible.
Like what, it's like anime animations? Or
yes,
what?
They animate every single game they're going to play. So like for the Lions, for example, they had this soldier, this Charger soldier, going to fight a lion. That's how they announced they had this Lions game coming up. They're just so brilliant with it. And I feel like the NHL should like look to take from that. Get on the socials. That's where people are. Even during games, people are always on Twitter or Instagram. You want your videos quick and exciting for people to access right away.
Very true. So on that note, we're going to go on break. We have some MLB talk right after these short little messages.
Crossover Comics turns 11 this year, so get ready to party with Montreal's number one comic shop as voted by you. Explore graphic novels, manga, Pokemon, Magic, Funkos, D&D, and more. Hold on to your capes, though. It's our birthday, but you're getting the gifts. From October 20 to the 22nd, brace yourself for a spectacular weekend-long birthday sale. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Groulx. It's a once-in-an-11-year event that you can't afford to miss. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Ashes to Ashes is your home for modern pop in all of its forms, whether it be synth pop, hyper pop, ambient pop, or anything else ending in pop. Along with bops, the show features interviews and performances from an always growing list of emerging and established pop artists from both the local Montreal music scene and abroad. So tune in at 7 p.m. every Tuesday on CJLO 1690 AM and CJLO.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the Starting Rotation on CJLO 1690 AM. As always, I'm Gabriel Gindy. Alongside me, in person, Jacob Snyder.
Hey.
What's popping? So, we just came back from a little break. Spoke about the NHL, the revert, backtrack on the Pride Tape debacle, the NHL Frozen Frenzy, their take on NFL Red Zone. But now, we're moving a bit south to the border with the MLB.
Exceptional, exceptional playoffs. I mean, if you're the MLB, you could not be happier with how your series went, your championship series. I don't even follow baseball that closely, and I was on the edge of my seat for these games. Teams taking 2-0 leads, losing them 3-2, and then coming back and winning the series 4-3. I've never seen anything like it.
It sounds crazy.
To start, Phil's D-backs. The Phillies, those bats, have been hot all postseason, and they were that game too. You know how in baseball, the main objective, obviously, you want to get runners on the base paths. If you're not able to hit home runs, you want to get runners in scoring position to at least threaten. And the Phils seem like they'd be able to do that no problem. Every single time, it seemed like they made great contact against the Diamondbacks pitchers, but the Diamondbacks would always make a play to strand runners. Bryce Harper, the superstar for the Phillies, household name, young child prodigy to MLB star, 0-for-4. You can't do it in the biggest of game sevens. And Ketel Marte, on the other hand, for the D-backs, 16-game hitting streak to begin the postseason career. Just an electric, electric game. And as I'm absolutely shocked that we're not talking about the Phillies in the World Series based on how they were hitting to start the postseason.
Were the Phillies that hot to be expected to go to the World Series?
See, that was the thing. They were one of the favorites for sure, but in terms of, you know, expected to go to the World Series, I wouldn't say so. I think most people would have put their money on the Astros. I'm sure Mattress Mack himself did. But once the postseason started, all the Phillies did was hit. Home runs left, right, and center. That whole lineup, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, just going deep at all times. Opposing teams didn't know what to do with them. And it didn't look like they would cool down. They really didn't. That was the unique thing about this game. They made such great contact, but finished with two runs. What do you even say if you're the Phillies after that? To dig yourself out of a 2-0 series hole, take the lead 3-2, and then still lose the series.
It sounds like a choke job.
It does. And that's why I highlighted the Bryce Harper thing going 0-for-4. Another playoff series, they weren't able to get it done. But going forward, do you make changes? Do you keep it the same? I think based on the success they had, you really can't do anything. You just have to look inwardly more than anything. When it's a big game, your hitters have to come through, and they just weren't able to. similar to the Houston Astros, who, my goodness, forgot how to pitch. The Astros, also down 2-0, came all the way back to take a 3-2 series lead. In those last two games, the Rangers scored 20 runs. I know you don't follow baseball super closely, but a good hitting night is 5 runs.
So they got 4 times that.
Right. Adolis Garcia, an absolute tear. In the closeout game, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs. After in game 6, he had a single home run, but 4 RBIs. Incredibly impressed with the Rangers top to bottom. Once I saw Max Scherzer go out, a player I followed for a long time, and just not be able to locate his fastball anywhere, I assumed the Rangers were cooked, but they were able to come all the way back and put it together. And for the Astros, it's not just losing the series, it's their manager. Dusty Baker expected to step down after. If you're the Astros, I mean, you're coming off the World Series title, but you surely wanted more. It's tough to keep your core together in baseball. These guys get such lucrative free agent contracts.
Yeah, I want to ask about that, but please continue your point.
No, go right ahead. Jump right in.
It always seems like we always talk about athlete loyalty in the NBA and how it's kind of like dwindling. The only really loyal athlete left was, quote unquote, Damian Lillard, right? He was in Portland for nearly a decade. But now you're looking at the MLB, and it seems like they always flip-flop from different teams, all based off of their lucrative contracts. How likely is it that players switch back and forth like that?
Oh, it's almost 100% at this point. Because I know with the in my division against the Tigers, the Minnesota Twins, I couldn't believe it. I'm watching the Twins, and there's Carlos Correa, one of the best Astros hitters the last five years for the team. He's now on the Twins in Minnesota. In the NBA, at least, the guys tend to gravitate towards the bigger, more exciting markets. In the MLB, it's an absolute free-for-all. It is just money.
So are there initially, I have multiple questions, but like, what is a general cap on a contract, like term?
There's none. That's the thing. The MLB operates without a salary cap.
Okay, so it's really independent per team.
It's a free market. It's an absolute free market. Okay. So you wonder why guys are chasing money. But that highlights the importance of the farm system. And that's what the Astros have always been great at. But now we're about 10 years deep into the bad Astros days. Now this, I don't know how long you followed the Astros for. We talked about the cheating scandal last week.
That's the only thing I know.
Okay. For a long, long time, the Astros were terrible. They were the absolute laughing stock.
Kind of like the Oakland A's in a way.
The A's would beat them by 10 runs back in the day. They didn't have a soul. But what they did during that time, which was very intelligent, is they built up that farm system. But now we're about 10 years deep, and all those guys are starting to either age, leave, or are on big contracts like Altuve. If you're the Astros, you have to be at least a little bit worried your run might be slowing down.
But even with a World Series championship win a few years ago, that hasn't really brought any dollars into the organization or the franchise?
Oh, it has, but at the same time, you have these massive spending teams. The owner of the New York Mets, his name is escaping me, but is just able to outspend. The New York Yankees able to outspend. The Los Angeles Dodgers, backed by some of the wealthiest owners on the planet, are always able to outspend. And then the guys you're talking, like the example I gave with Correa, he was an injury risk at the time, right? But if you're the Minnesota Twins and you're not really paying anybody else that much money, you can go in at $150 million still for an injured player.
So what's an average term on a contract?
It depends. So for pitchers, for the elite pitchers and hitters, you're talking a 5 to 7 year deal in the $200 to $300 million range.
That's insane. That's crazy.
It's incredible too, because if you talk about pitchers, the risk. Last week we brought up Shohei, right? Hitters, you feel a bit safer about, right? They can usually at least stay healthy. If they're having issues, you can DH them where they're just hitting, not having to play the field. But with pitchers, it feels like every pitch you're at risk for a torn UCL and Tommy John, which is what Shohei's dealing with. And to give them these massive contracts, it's certainly a risk. I mean, the players will push back against the salary cap for, you know, until the end of the time, but you feel like owners might want to institute that at some point.
Yeah. What about the Rangers though? They're going up against the D-backs in the World Series.
I would feel this.
Who do you have actually before that?
If I were a betting man, I'd be all in on the Rangers. what I've seen, especially these last two games, I'm so impressed by the bats. Now, you'll notice the theme here. We talked last week, and I told you the Phillies were well on their way to the World Series for the same reason. So maybe the Diamondbacks were just this clutch team. Even in that, and I hate to slander a team that won, but even in that Game 7, I left more impressed with the Phils. Like, they were the ones making the consistent big-time contact. It was just the Diamondbacks. It seemed whenever they need a hit or run, they'd come through. So maybe they can clutch up, but I believe it'll be the Rangers, and I don't think it'll be that close.
Mm. To be honest, I don't know. Maybe you're making a very compelling argument as to why I should maybe look a bit more into baseball, because I am absolutely blind when it comes to this.
Oh, I can't blame you for that at all. I didn't follow it for the longest time, especially with that regular season being 162 games.
It's
100-something
games, and they play every day or something.
You need to cut it back. Sometimes even twice a day on doubleheaders.
They play twice a day?
Doubleheaders. Oh, yeah.
Like the same team plays twice in one day?
Yes.
How does that work?
They play about 2 hours apart, too. So you'll have a different starting pitcher.
Both home games or both?
Yes, both home games.
And just two teams
playing twice that day just to get the games in. That's how you know there are too many games.
So has it always been this long? This length?
Yes.
So
money. As we always talk about money.
No. money drives sports. That's unquestioned. But 160 games, though, like, how do they get breaks? And that's probably why they're so prone to injury, right? The pitchers,
exactly what we're talking about. You're overused.
You're gonna use your ligaments. You're gonna tear a muscle.
Not only the 162 game, all the training in between. It's not like, especially for pitchers, you can't just go in. Like NFL quarterbacks later in their career, they don't throw as much during practice. They just have that muscle memory to be able to go. But pitchers, it's such a precision when you're throwing that ball 100 miles an hour and you have to hit a spot in the strike zone. You have to stay sharp. And yeah. No, but this was the... If this isn't the postseason to get you into baseball, I'm not sure what will be. Even me, as a very casual baseball fan, could not believe these games.
Well, you're not very casual. Like, you're an expert in this, clearly.
I mean,
like, you just went on a spiel for the past 10 minutes-ish, give or take.
That's because we're talking playoffs. You ask me about regular season, I'll be really quiet.
Okay, fair enough. But how do you get through a whole game, personally?
That's the thing. So that's why I talk about watching playoffs. It feels very tense. I will give them credit. Whereas the regular season, it does not.
It's like a snooze fest.
It doesn't feel serious. It's the weirdest thing. But I will say, this past year, a few friends and I went to a Tigers game. And this is how unclosely I follow baseball during the regular season. We get there, and all of a sudden, I felt this pace of play. I was just so into it. The pitch clock. What an excellent thing to institute. No longer are you having pitchers just stand there on the mound endlessly for 2 to 3 minutes in between. They have, I think it's 35 seconds between pitches to throw it, or it's an automatic ball. What a brilliant thing to institute. It sped up the game so much, and it made it that much more intense.
How long ago did they implement this?
I believe it's the first year with it. Do not quote me on that one. But yeah, it's the first year I've seen with it. And
I didn't know that. That seems like, because I think that was my biggest gripe, or at least attempting to watch baseball in the past, was that the cameras would be focusing on fans eating hot dogs or like just butterflies in left field. You're like, what's going on?
You have to, right, you had to cover the 4 minutes the pitcher was standing there doing nothing.
We're not even watching the sport. We're watching fans wolf down glizzies. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy. It made no sense.
No, but again, and what I'll never know is the pitchers who push back on it for so long. I'm sure it's easier to wait there for 4 minutes.
But I guess, I don't know, I've used my shoulder throwing a ball before. I know that after like 10, 15 minutes, your shoulder starts to, you know, you feel it. So for them, I guess their main gripe was 35 seconds just isn't long enough for a break. Is that it?
Essentially. That was what it came down to. But at the same time, they have the stats, they have the data. The injury rate is no higher than it is the other years. The main issue, as you mentioned, is the 162 games. If you're that concerned about injuries, let's cut back on the games a bit.
Yeah. No, that's 100%. Was there anything else you want to talk about the MLB, or should we just move on?
No, World Series favorite, the Rangers. Very excited for that. I'm sure next week we'll have quite a bit to get into.
Of course, but yeah, we will. And I'll try and get into it a bit more on my end.
You should watch one.
Yeah, I will. Maybe we'll get a beer or something. We'll figure it out.
All right. Hey.
but in the NFL, so I remember before we started the show, you mentioned that they were a lot of calls on one team. I forget what team you mentioned, but could you elaborate on that?
So last week we talked about which teams I thought were the best in each conference.
Yeah.
And my goodness, could I have not could I have not been any more wrong? That's the fun thing about the NFL. Your opinions and everything can change week to week. Each game matters so much, and each team presents such a different look. You can see flaws in certain teams that you didn't see before. Talking last week, you asked me the best teams. I gave you the Lions and the NFC, who were blown out 38-6 in Baltimore, and the Dolphins, the AFC, whose offense, the Dolphins this past weekend against the Eagles, the offense goes completely quiet. Now, I know Dolphins fans. I know the penalty differential, 11-0, not acceptable.
So, who are they against? Who do they play against?
So it was Lions and Ravens. Ravens 4-2, Lions 5-1 going in the game, and Dolphins were in Philly against the Eagles, both 5-1.
Okay, because the only headline I'm seeing here is that the NFL admits two incorrect calls in Colts loss.
Yes.
What were those calls?
I only know of the one. The one was the most egregious. So the Browns were trailing. They were going in to try and score and go ahead of the Colts. A ball was thrown well over the head of a Browns receiver, and the Colts defensive back made some contact. But what happens there is the ref should have determined that the ball was not catchable. I mean, this ball was 10 yards above the guy's head. There was no way he was catching it. They call pass interference in the end zone, giving the ball to the Browns, an automatic first down at the Colts' one-yard line. So obviously the Browns scored. Mm-hmm. And won the game.
Wow.
Otherwise, that drive would have surely stalled and the Colts would have won.
But I do find it's a common occurrence where the NFL refs kind of sometimes do, you know, miss calls.
Oh, the
often. I don't want to quote that, though.
But no, like, no, you don't. But at the same, it's such a tough game. It's such a tough game to ref. Like, I remember listening to this one show and one analyst. There's holding on every play. You really have to determine as a ref what's severe enough to call, because it's such a physical sport and guys are always engaged. You're always fighting. You're always pushing. You're always grabbing and tugging. What is bad enough to call? And that's the thing that varies game to game that really bothers fans, because it is a subjective thing. Fans see it like last game. Oh, well, the slightest tug was an automatic hold. But this game, the guys are basically tackling each other and they're allowed to be let play. It's the consistency that fans want, and with a variety of reffing crews, I don't think you're ever going to get that.
It's just, I guess it varies from crew to crew.
It does.
Right? Just like in the NHL, it varies from crew to crew.
Right. There's some crews that lead the league in holding calls. So if you have these guys this week, you know, listen, if you're engaged, you have to let go as a lineman.
Yeah.
Like, there's ways to adapt, but like in that Colts game, that's just a terrible call. There are some calls that are just bad, and you have to move
on. Was that the worst call this week?
Worst call, I mean, without me being biased, Aiden Hutchinson got held quite a few times, but 38-6, but so whatever.
I'm just curious, you know, you're a Detroit Lions, kind of fumbled the bag here this week.
We were terrible. We didn't show up. It's very shocking.
What happened?
Offense, defense, and special teams, no one performed. It's something I haven't seen out of the Lions in quite a few years. Dan Campbell, not the best X's and O's coach, although I feel like his coordinators pick up the slack there, but an excellent motivator of players. I've seen this Lions team lose under him. I've seen a 3-13 year, but I've never seen the team go out and just not show up. That is not Dan Campbell's MO, and that's exactly what they did. They didn't look prepped for Lamar.
The thing, though, because Lamar seemed this year that he was kind of on an offbeat.
He was.
And then against the Lions, he kind of like, he was at his peak again. He was like kind of like a prime Lamar Jackson.
That was the most impressive I think I've ever seen Lamar throwing the ball. I've seen him have better running games.
Yeah.
But in terms of throwing, he was absolutely on point. Now, something I read after that would shine a bit of light on that. Lamar Jackson's actually 16-1 career versus the NFC. Part of that is that unique offense the Ravens run. NFC teams just don't see that. There's such a gap right now between NFC and AFC football. It's funny because they're separate conferences. You know, you're playing the same sport. You think it couldn't be that far apart. But the NFC is very much grit, grind, running the ball, physical in the trenches. Whereas the AFC, you have these superstar quarterbacks that are dynamic in space and throwing the ball everywhere. And I just think the jump, the Lions have been playing a lot of NFC opponents, they weren't able to adapt. And I think you saw the same thing with Miami and Philadelphia. The Dolphins going into Philly, they had some opportunities, and they just they weren't ready to handle Philly's lines. Philadelphia dominated in the trenches. I understand the Dolphins had players out along the offensive line, but if you're Mike McDaniel, you have the opportunity to adapt with some quicker passes to all these superstar receivers, and I really didn't feel like he did that.
Yeah. See, like, I feel like the AFC is probably more like passing-oriented.
Oh, 100%.
X's and O's, you know?
Yeah.
As for the NFC, it's kind of like more wild style, you know, run like a QB run, run mentality, physical, like gritty.
Defense.
Yeah, defense.
Punt, you know, field position, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
A bigger topic I kind of want to bring up with
for
you.
For sure, go ahead.
One of my main observations for this weekend, I really feel like this should be the year a non-quarterback wins MVP. I think we are seeing such stellar performances from defensive players and one wide receiver out of Miami. It should finally be the year that we see a non-quarterback get it.
And why is that?
I feel like quarterback play across the league has been down. One team I'm going to use is the Kansas City Chiefs, actually. Mahomes, widely considered an MVP frontrunner, as he should be, 6-1 team, or 5-1 team, not having one of his best years statistically, but he has the number 2 defense in the league back him, which many people don't know. And if you look across a lot of the teams, Jalen Hurts on Philadelphia is another great example. These usual MVP contenders are not having their usual statistical seasons. Even in that Miami game, which Philly was able to win fairly handily, Hurts had a pick 6. Mahomes, you'll see a lot of interceptions or dropped interceptions, although playing the Chargers this... even against the Chargers this week, he threw one. Whereas you see these defensive players, Myles Garrett, I'm not sure if you saw the highlight, but was able to fully jump over a field goal blocking unit and block a kick. Really served,
that's crazy.
Served as the difference.
Yeah.
Strip sacks, blowing up runs. Him, TJ Watt, and then to give one offensive player, I think Tyreek Hill on the Dolphins. They've been the ones that have really stood out to me as the best in the league.
So I'm looking at a list right now of the former NFL MVPs, and the last time there was a non-quarterback position was Adrian Peterson in 2012.
Yes, sir.
So let me ask you this. Do you think MVPs are usually awarded to quarterbacks because there's more attention on quarterbacks than other positions?
More attention, and
you're not going to give an MVP to a long snapper, right?
Exactly. More attention. It's easier to see their successes, and their stats just look louder on paper. It always will. Yeah. Like, think about a good game for a running back. 100 yards. We all, you know, that's the standard. Maybe 1-2 touchdowns. But a quarterback, an average quarterback, can still throw for 300 yards in the league the way it's set up with the passing. You can't touch receivers past 5 yards.
But you have to have a good, like, supporting cast around you, right? Like, if you look at, like, a Mac Jones, right, in New England, who's is he throwing 300 yards a game?
good quarterbacks, no. perfect example I'll give is Kirk Cousins.
Okay.
Very average offensive line, poor running game, Justin Jefferson out. Going against one of the top defenses of the league in San Francisco, threw for 378 yards. Mm. It's a passing league. These quarterbacks put up stats. Kirk Cousins, he's averaging well over 300 yards a game. The team is 3-4. It's just, they just have an opportunity, the way the game's called, the way both officiated and play calling, to put up stats. And I think this is the year we have an opportunity to look a little deeper, and we're getting these standout defensive performances and an excellent offensive performance from Hill, to where maybe we can finally look past some of these quarterbacks and give recognition to these other positions.
I think it's due, right? If the last time an MVP was awarded who wasn't a quarterback was 2012. And I'm trying to think off the top of my head who could have replaced a former MVP who was a QB in another position. But off the top, I don't really know. From 2012 onward, I don't know.
Well, not onward, but prior to 2012, you had LaDainian Tomlinson.
He was there, yeah.
Yeah. I think Alexander broke through on the MVP. That was about the first year I was watching football. But to turn this to you here, isn't that more fun when every position can win it? Does this really do we really need to turn the MVP into a quarterback award? I think it's so much more fun and adds even more to these huge performances when you say, hey, if you're the Cleveland Browns, we have this elite defensive player. Not only is he a threat to win Defensive Player of the Year, he might be voted the best player in the whole league.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. I don't think it should be exclusively like a quarterback award. But, you know, with all the attention they get on a weekly basis, which is already very finite, it's very limited already. It doesn't really, and a roster, NFL rosters, how many players on the team? Like 30-ish?
So you're 53 every game.
Yeah, see,
but
53.
You're only playing around 40 at most.
Fair. But out of that 40, only like one, and then maybe one crazy wide receiver is getting attention. Everyone else, I couldn't even name you the starting center of, like, I don't know, the Minnesota Vikings.
Correct.
Right? So, like, in that point, there are players who probably deserve, for sure, more recognition, right? But on that front, it's usually more or less, like you said, it's a passing league. The quarterback is the guy. He is the captain, you know, in a way, depending. And unfortunately, all the attention is focused on him.
Yeah, it's... In other years, I understand it. We've seen some massive quarterback performances. Mahomes recently had 50 touchdowns. You know, I get it. But
I get it, but honestly, like...
this year, I would love to see a non-quarterback win one, is kind of where I'm at. I've just seen such standout performances week in, week out from a lot of defensive players, receivers. I feel like they should at least get a look this year. And quarterback play overall, I feel like it's been down.
So with that being said, who would you nominate?
So my top three, no particular order. I have Myles Garrett of the Cleveland Browns. I have TJ Watt of the Pittsburgh Steelers. TJ Watt working with absolutely nothing on offense.
Yeah.
Good players around him on defense, but it's a scoring league and his team's not able to score yet. He's helping his team go out there and win. He had a game-changing interception. And then finally, Miami Dolphins, Tyreek Hill. I believe he opposed to Tua, although Tua's a great player, don't get me wrong, is the main cog to their success. He dropped one late in the game against Philadelphia. They were only down 7, and he broke free on a slant and dropped it. And that's what I feel really crushed their momentum more than anything else. He's just such a game breaker at the receiver position. He's almost impossible to account for. And just game in and game out, he's just been absolutely dominant. I'd call the last game an off game for him, and he still had, I think, 11 catches.
We have a few minutes before break, but I want to ask you a very general question. Because I've been, you know, as Montrealers, well, I'm from Montreal. You're from where?
LaSalle, Ontario.
LaSalle, Ontario. That's very close to the U.S. border.
Yes, it is. You wonder why I like all these Detroit teams.
Exactly, yeah. Because I don't think there's any pro teams in LaSalle, Ontario.
No, sir.
Last time I checked. But I'm always curious as to knowing, like, how, for you it makes more sense, but, like, how, for example, Montrealers find these affinities or these fan bases of American teams. And it usually has the most, like, generally it's followed by the most outlandish story, like, oh, my father was a fan, or, oh, this only played on TV at a certain time, or this, that, and the other thing. But it seems like you have friends who are more in the NFL realm, right?
I've been so impressed since I've come here. I thought I'd come here and would be on an absolute island. I have absolutely loved coming to Montreal and having this massive NFL fandom here.
So has anyone given you their story as to why they're a fan of a specific team?
Oh, of course. So can you given me. I've asked for it. Please, I've searched it out. My buddy here, I watch games with each Sunday. Miami Dolphins fans, right? And we are nowhere near Miami.
Exactly.
Well, it turns out the father immigrated from France, and his work took him to Miami, and the kid grew up there for only 6 years of his life, but would always go back. The dad would take him back, and the dad would go back himself to go watch games. And then here you go, you have a Miami Dolphins sports fan in the middle of Montreal.
I'm so curious because, like, if I'm trying to, like, relate to myself, I've never really found a team, you know.
You don't have any deep ties to any NFL team,
because I'm like, okay, well, Montreal doesn't have a team, so, like, I'm a loyal one, you know?
I respect it. Yep.
Like, if there's no team in my city, who do I root for?
But you didn't ever have a player that really stood out and drew you in? Because that can happen, too. Often, like you said, proximity, that's the first thing. Second thing, though, can be a player. Like, some people start watching a certain sport because a player just caught their eye. And that's then fair. That can get them into a team.
Yeah, like one of my good friends, he's a Commanders fan.
They're actually trying to go back to Redskins, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, they filed there was a lawsuit.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, which is wild. But anyway, he was a fan because of RG3.
Right.
Followed him through NCAA. And then when he got drafted by the Commanders, he just totally became a fan. And
that's all
ever
fun.
Since. Yeah, ever since. But hey, on that note, we're going to go on a little break. When we get back, we'll be talking about the NBA and the Suns' future with Bradley Beal. So stay tuned.
Traveling seems almost like a necessity, either for the pleasure of discovering new places or to visit friends and family. However, in a time of increased awareness about our environmental impact, ViaRail might provide the answer you need. Not only does ViaRail offer a solution to the problem of travel's carbon footprint, but does so at low cost and with great comfort. But don't just take it from me. Here are two members of the Concordia community who can speak to their own experiences traveling with Via.
I love taking ViaRail because I like the quiet pause and relaxation it incorporates into my travel. I always meet really cool people on the train and enjoy taking the time to have interesting conversations with my fellow travelers about where they come from and where they're going.
I've used ViaRail quite a few times and I really like it. It's accessible price-wise, even for students, and it's super, super convenient. I'll definitely keep using them.
Go to viarail.ca to learn more about pricing options for students and young people so you can start making a difference and saving money with your travel today.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
All right, gang, let's really nail it this time. Here we go.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema?
Well, tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday from 8 to 9 a.m.
Only on CJLO 1690 a.m. in Montreal with your hosts Remy
and Danny.
This is how we do it.
Da, 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 da.
Hey, I never asked you.
Yeah.
You like guacamole? Oh, run! Oh, God! Run!
And we're back. You're listening to the Starting Rotation on CJLO 1690 AM. As always, I'm Gabriel Gindi. Alongside me, Jacob Snyder. So on the break, behind the scenes, we were talking still about the NFL fandom and what team should define you, I guess, would be the best thing. But I don't know. You said your goal now is to...
I was going to say my goal for the year now is to get you a team. I think it just adds so much to watching NFL football.
I know. And all my friends who... are diehard football fans, they all have their teams. And when we meet up on Sunday sometimes, they're like, oh, I'm going to watch my team on Red Zone, their team on Red Zone. And then like, you have to find a team. I'm like, I don't know.
Okay, good. So it's not just me pressuring you.
I'm facing pressure from all sides here. I'm feeling like I'm in a corner. But I don't mind no man's land, you know? I don't mind it.
Really?
It's okay. It keeps me neutral, right? But like on the same token, like it would be cool, I guess, to find a team. But at the same time, will I be motivated enough to keep tabs?
Like, see, that's the thing. That builds. You start by like, I kind of like them. Okay, they lost. I'm a little disappointed. But that only grows over the years. Like, I was never crushed when the Lions... I remember early on, like, I my family really cared about them, and that got me into the Lions. But I was never really crushed if they lost. Now, I'm devastated. Like, even when there's a bad play. And that grows over time, but it just adds to watching football. That's why I feel like you should do it. And we were talking a few teams. How about those Buffalo Bills?
They seem pretty interesting, the Buffalo Bills. I like the way they play with Josh Allen as QB. He's kind of like a run and gun style of QB, but can also dish it. But I don't know. Like, do I have that that motivation? This is, for me, it's really the motivation, because football games are what, like 4 hours long?
Yes,
three hours
sir.
Long?
Yeah.
I can get it's a fun sport to watch, right? Like if I'm with some friends, you go, they got some nachos out. I'm not going to complain. Hey, who doesn't like nachos, right? Like I'll munch a few. But at the same time, it's like, can I dedicate myself on a weekly basis?
Yep. It's 4 hours every Sunday. Yep. It becomes routine. Every Sunday. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah. Yeah. But before that, I just want to mention that we're at the halfway point of the CJLO funding drive. So Matt Jacob, you're new here.
Yes, sir.
So every year, CJLO hosts a funding drive, you know, to bring money into the studio.
Amazing.
Yeah. So there's going to be a little event tomorrow. So October 26th, they'll be broadcasting. CJLO will be broadcasting at the Hall Building. Sounds pretty nice, huh?
If I knew where that was, I could.
You're a Concordia student. You don't know the Hall Building?
No. You realize this is the only building I go in besides CJ, right?
So you know going to the downtown campus?
No.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to refresh you on that because tomorrow, you know, there'll be a few different events here and there, such as a rad, like pretty sick rad raffle prizes, you know? So if you're down, tune in from 1 to 4 p.m. But I have to show you a little tour of the city. Do you go downtown often or do you just hermit crab it?
No, yes, sir. Please, I live Plaza de Zar.
Okay, no,
excuse my pronunciation. But no, I absolutely love our downtown here, especially coming from a small town like LaSalle.
Tell me about that. I'm curious.
Oh, my. So
what's the population?
LaSalle, we've actually grown to about 200,000, believe it or not.
So it's pretty big.
Only recently, though. For the longest time growing up, we're talking about 100K. And again, I loved being so close to Detroit, but as you talked about the downtowns and stuff, I can't. I'm a city guy.
Yeah.
And I come from, I live on 5 acres back home, believe it or not.
That's what, do you farm?
Of land.
Farm?
Nope, just have it to have.
Oh, that's pretty sick.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool.
To mess around with, exactly.
Yeah, I had a friend back in the day who had like farmland. In the winter, we just take out the ski-doos.
Exactly.
Go crazy.
Go mess around, yeah.
But back to the football thing, I just don't know. Like, for you, it makes total sense.
Proximity.
You're like, what? How far from the border? Like,
I am 30 minutes from my house to the Lions Stadium. Exactly.
Yeah, you're close. You're there. But in Montreal, what's the closest team? Is it really Buffalo?
Yep. I looked, and I think it's Buffalo. Now, you could... I also suggested one of the New York teams. They have such a storied history.
Boring.
Right now they're terrible. Please don't kid yourself. But they have such a storied, fun history, the both of them. And the Giants, out of nowhere, about once every 10 years, they seem to win a Super Bowl. So,
yeah, I don't know. I think if I had to find like a team, again, like I don't think I'd be an avid like watcher, right? Like I think I'd be like more on the sidelines. But if I had to find a team. Probably be like one of those teams that are like less known right now. Like, I don't know, like a Tennessee Titans. Like some team that's like really like low key.
Who's your favorite?
New Orleans Saints, maybe? I don't know.
I've been to a ton of Saints games in my life, just kind of random. Spent some time in New Orleans growing up.
Yeah.
And amazing stadium to go to.
Yeah.
One of the best places to watch an NFL game.
Stadiums are getting wild now. Like that new Los Angeles stadium that's like halfway in the ground there. Like,
well, hey, I'll let you know how
it
is.
Called? Yeah, tell me about
SoFi Stadium.
SoFi, yeah. I was going to say Lo-Fi, but no, it's SoFi Stadium. But it November 12th. Looks insane. That screen.
Yes, sir.
How big is the screen? It's like 30 double-decker buses or
something. Your guess is good. It's massive. It is the largest screen I've seen.
And it just goes to show how much money they put into it, though.
But they outdo each other. I remember when...
It is a measuring contest in the end.
Have you seen... Yeah. It is. Oh, 100%. Great way to put it.
Yeah.
Great way.
Yeah.
I remember when Jerry's World opened in Dallas, the new Cowboys stadium, and I went for a Lions playoff game.
Is it actually named Jerry's World?
No. But
okay, that's the synonymous term?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I think it's AT&T Stadium.
Okay.
But again, they switch sponsors every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Jerry's got his own deals and stuff as well. I didn't know if you knew this, but the NFL was sponsored by Coke, but Jerry cut his own deal with Pepsi.
So how does that work?
He gets his own revenue.
From a broadcasting perspective, they have their own broadcasting team, I guess?
Yeah, they have their own cut of the revenue. It's
oh, wow.
It's a whole deep thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I remember when I went to Cowboy Stadium, and at the time, they had the largest video board. I don't even think it cracked the top 15 now. And this thing opened back in, what, I think 2009, 2010?
So with that being said, what is the, I guess, what's the least exciting stadium in the NFL right now?
Oh, I hate to slander it because I had such a
fun
time. No.
Slow down.
We've gotten better. We've gotten better. No, I had an absolutely awesome experience watching a game there, but the Tennessee Titans need to do some work on that stadium.
Okay, so that's because I love character. I love, like, you know, the underdog.
Oh,
I don't
it's
know.
Terrible,
I think,
though.
Plus, they have a good they have a great receiver, no, over there?
Hopkins, he's slowing down.
No, okay.
He's also on the trade block.
Oh, yeah.
Who
was there formerly? Wasn't there someone else?
Well, they have the superstar running back, Derrick Henry.
That's who I was thinking of. Yeah, the running back, Derrick Henry.
He's fun. Definitely fun to watch, yeah.
Yeah, he's a fridge.
He is.
He's massive. His legs are the size of two heads stuck together.
I cannot believe, and he runs so straight up and down.
Yeah.
He's not, but somehow cannot, well, I mean.
Is there QB Tannehill?
So that was the thing. Massive injury to Ryan Tannehill this past weekend. It sounds like it's going to be Will Levis this coming Sunday.
Will Levis.
Might be a tough time for you to jump on the Titans bandwagon is all I'm saying.
Hey, I'm a fan of the Habs, and we haven't won anything since God knows how long.
Now, hold on. I know we're already through NHL, but I've been hearing a lot of good things about the Habs this year is all I'm saying. I hear a lot of hope.
I don't know. The Habs have a very high ceiling, but we've been in a rebuild. I'm 25 years old. I don't think we've ever had a player pass 80 points except for Alexei Kovalev 1 year. We've never had a 40-goal scorer. We always are in this like this weird perpetual sense that, oh, you know, we're always kind of like, it's like a soft rebuild in a way. But then you draft players like Price who are just excelling in their position. So then it slows down the rebuild because the goalie's so good. So then you're relying so much on the goalie that when the goalie finally leaves, then we're all the way back at square one where we have absolutely nothing.
I am so horrified listening to this. This is like,
you know, Lions. It's a perpetual cycle. It's cyclical, and it just gets so annoying. But the thing is, I can't hate my Habs. They're great, but they're great. Hold on, they're not great on a performance base, but they're great because they're just the Habs. They're just a storied franchise. It's like you can't hate on the Cowboys in the NFL, I guess.
Not to give you more homework,
you can hate on the fan base, but you can't hate on the history of it.
You have to follow the history of the Lions now because what you described is what I've been living through.
Well,
now,
I remember you had Megatron, right? Megatron. Flopped. Stafford too. Stafford.
I have some issues with in terms of everyone describing him as a great player, but Megatron, perfect example. And Ndamukong Suh. We had these sensational players that would raise this floor, right? Like exactly what you talked about. The team clearly would need a rebuild. We weren't good enough to win games, but you have these sensational players that you just lucked into, essentially, that would lift this floor. And then all of a sudden, well, we can't really rebuild. We have Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
And you know what that's led to? I am 27 as of tomorrow. I've never seen the Lions win the NFC North, the division we're in my lifetime.
That's tough. I've at least seen, they haven't even won. They went to two Eastern Conference finals, one in, I believe, 2010 and another in 2013. The Habs did make the finals in 2021, but that was a COVID year.
Was that okay?
That was with the Canadian division, and it was a bit of an anomaly because there were teams that were better in the States that did not make it because they were in a way tougher division. The Canadian division was really weak, making the Habs, who only had like something like 40-ish wins. I don't even think they were playing for 500. They just made it to the playoffs. And they went on a Cinderella run. But the thing is, generally, when a team makes it that far, the organization accommodates the fans. Whether you put a screen outside, you know.
Oh, my goodness. In. You saw with Toronto.
There
yes.
was nothing.
Are
no
you
screen
kidding?
Outside. I think there wasn't even, I think like 5.5 fans were in the building. It was abysmal. And of course, COVID was the main catalyst as to why that wasn't happening, right? But just give me an old RCA TV from the 80s. I'll watch in front.
Oh, no, my goodness.
There was
right.
nothing. There was nothing. And the fans were there. It was crazy. But the night they went to the finals, I've never seen the city so lively.
I've
never
heard
seen
stories.
The city so I got tear gassed. It was crazy.
I'm so jealous. You guys.
Yeah, the tear gas felt nice. Yeah.
Okay, not the tear gas part. Hey, let's clarify that.
No. But it honestly, like, it just adds this whole dynamic to the city because growing up, you know, they went on so many repeats, like so many two-peats, three-peats, and you're just like, wow. When my parents were my age, they at least won like 13 cups. And now, me being my age now, like the same age as my parents once were, they got to what? Got almost swept. They got like a gentleman sweep in the finals, like a 5-game loss, and then two flops in the Eastern Conference final. But hey, that's being a Montreal fan. And to cycle back, that's why I think Tennessee might be my team, because hey, if they're going to lose, I'm already used to it.
No, sir. We are bringing you into the Detroit Lions because you have lived it. You have lived
Fair enough.
The cycle.
On that note, anything you want to conclude the show with?
No, just I hope everyone enjoyed the great sports weekend. We have so much going on right now in all the leagues, so definitely get yourself in front of a TV if you got the time.
Oh, yeah. On that note, you were watching The Starting Rotation with Gabriel Guinea and Jacob Snyder. See you next week.